Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, it's nice to see everybody. Thank you. And I'm going to continue talking about the opening paragraph of Dogen Zenji's fascicle from Shobogenzo, which means true Dharma eye, from Gyoji, which means continuous practice. So let me read the paragraph again that we've been, I think this is the fourth lecture. And then I think maybe there'll be one more after this, and then I'll move on to something else. So as you recall, the first patriarch in China came from the west to the eastern lands at the instruction of the venerable Prajnatara, his teacher. For the 3 years of frosts and springs during that ocean voyage, how could the wind and snow have been the only miseries? Through how many formations of cloud and sea mist might the steep waves have surged? He was going to an unknown country. Ordinary beings who value their body and life could never conceive of such a journey. This must have been the maintenance of the practice realized solely for the great benevolent will to transmit the Dharma and save deluded emotional beings. It was so because the transmission of the Dharma is Bodhidharma himself. So this is what I'm going to talk about today. It was so because the transmission of the Dharma is Bodhidharma himself. It was so because the transmission of Dharma is Bodhidharma himself. It was so because the transmission of Dharma is the entire universe. It was so because the whole universe in 10 directions is the real state of truth. It is so because the whole universe in 10 directions is Bodhidharma himself. And it was so because the whole universe in the 10 directions is the whole universe in the 10 directions. That's what we're going to talk about today. So as you recall, in the first lecture, Bodhidharma made the voyage from India to China. It took him 3 years on a ship. We talked about that. And then the next time we talked about Dogen and how Dogen made his journey from Japan to China. And remember, he ran into the Tenzos, the two Tenzos, who taught him something about letting go of intellectual practice and kind of figuring out how practice relates to everyday life. So that was the topic of lecture two. And then the last lecture, we talked about the archetype of what it's like to suffer and what it's like to find practice and engage in practice and how that is. So this time I wanted to talk about, I think this, in some ways, this lecture might be a little more doctrinal, but then on the other hand, I also want to tell you why it resonates for me. So at that point, it's going to be more about my own heart connection with this teaching. So, you know, continuous practice was so because the transmission of Dharma is Bodhidharma himself. So this is like a super packed sentence here. Continuous practice is that effort. Continuous practice is that effort of everything in the whole universe through its very presencing and life making the universe itself. So that Zabaton there is engaging in the continuous practice of supporting all of life. Our life engages in the continuous practice of supporting all of life. A tree's life, anything that we can name, any particular thing, is part of this vision of continuous practice, is part of this effort. So that's what that continuity is. It's like our life is a process. And this process of life is not just our individual activity. You know, we say, well, this is my life, right? I'm born, I do these things, I have these thoughts, I have this notion of who I am, I have relationships. At some point I die, that's my life, that's somebody's life. And yet there's so much more going on that we just aren't even cognizant of. So there's also the life of everything else that we encounter that's also engaged in those processes. Those processes of that life are not even necessarily in the same timeline that our life is, right? So if you're an ant, your life, if you have a consciousness of yourself, consciousness of yourself as an ant, then your lifespan may be a completely different time span than the time span of a human being. We're aware of the fact that redwood trees, for example, sequoias, have this massively long lifespan compared to ours. And by the way, since everything is in comparison to us, because as human beings, we seem to have this propensity to want to compare all of life in relationship to us. Not only do we make these comparisons, but we also say, what could you do for me today? That's really, you know, our criteria for the value of other beings is sort of like, well, if I don't know what your value is for me, then there must not be much value that you're offering me. So we laugh about that because we know it's ironic, right? We know it's true. And yet at the same time, we also understand that folly of our own view of other beings is folly, that it is the road to destruction. But we keep barreling down that road as human beings. Anyway, continuous practice is this effort that the whole world is making just by its very existence, the whole world, each thing in this world. Because the whole world, there, in some ways, there isn't anything called the whole world. Because the whole world has no boundaries. So it's like we say the whole world, we say the whole universe, but actually there's no boundary of time and space. It is this continuous effort. It is this reciprocity. It is this interpenetration. It is this activity of everything in its daily life. Moment after moment after moment after moment. Making this world that we live in, making this world that sustains us. You know, everything around us is sustaining us in some way. And yet what we see for the most part are our problems, really. We see our problems, which is understandable, but there's a kind of joy, there's a kind of altruism, there's a kind of beneficial mindset to actually going outside of that mental space and seeing and allowing the world to come forward and meet us and say, hey, continuous practice is happening here, you know? So this is continuous practice. This is the continuous practice of all being, and we're part of that continuous practice. And then, of course, we have what we call formal practice. So that formal practice is what we say we doing zazen, we're engaging in practice. But what is the point of that formal practice? I think the point of that formal practice is for us to see continuous practice of all being. That when we actually sit down and engage in zazen, that somehow it immediately grounds us into that continuous practice, whether we can see that or not. Because, of course, we're always part of the continuous practice of all beings because we are all being as well. We're not separate from it. And so we're part of that continuous practice, continuously, endlessly throughout time and space. We don't even know what our practice is. So we do the best that we can do in our everyday lives. And from a Buddhist perspective, this formal practice is this practice of the Bodhisattva. So the Bodhisattva practice is this altruistic practice in which we say the vows of the Bodhisattva are to save all beings. We don't know what that means, right? We don't know what that means. I would say maybe a more user-friendly way is to say, to engage in skillful response, to give it our best shot to help as best we can. I'd say that that's probably more of a way of talking about that, that we can understand. Because saving has this kind of soporific aspect to it. It's very Christian in a way, so we get kind of lost in the morass of that. To save all beings, to end all delusion, to enter all Dharma gates, and to follow Buddha's way. So all of those things are koans. All of those things are, what is that? What is that, you know? How, can I end all delusions? Well, actually, the teaching is no, you can't. Right? Because it is the nature of being in the Sangha world. It is the nature of being a human being. It's the nature of life itself to be caught in some way. And yet, simultaneously, being caught is not being caught. There's this way in which we can be caught and not caught simultaneously. So that's that koan. So this is our bodhisattva practice, this continuous practice. Continuous practice was so because the transmission of Dharma is Bodhidharma himself. What is this transmission of Dharma? So Dharma can be, can be two things, usually. One, Dharma can be the teaching, so that's a capital D. Dharma also means, in Sanskrit means the law, so how things are, right? How things are. So our teachings are about how do we learn about how things are? How do we learn about the nature of reality? Because if we learn about the nature of reality as this continuous practice, and we start to respond from that place, that's a very altruistic place. It's a very altruistic practice. That's a practice grounded in how can I help? That's a practice grounded in to allow myriad things to come forth to meet me, right? Is, as Dogen says in Genja Koan, to allow myriad things to come forth is realization. So how do I incorporate? How do I allow the myriad things of my life to come forth and meet me? How do I go to a meeting and allow the myriad ideas that come forth in this meeting? How do I discern? How do I decide? How do I respond? How do I respond to someone I don't like? How do I respond to someone who has a different idea than I do? Those are the myriad things coming forward to meet us. How do I respond to the other driver? How do I respond to the person walking down the sidewalk? And the answer to that question is always probably going to be different. You know, it's going to be different. So, but it's based on this way in which we have this kind of flexibility and intelligence and discernment about the nature of our experience that's grounded in this notion that we are all in this together, that we're doing this continuous practice together. And predicated on that is also an idea that we're doing the best that we can, that everybody's probably doing the best that they can, even if we don't agree what their idea of the best that they can do is. Because we can see within ourselves that we're making our best effort to do the best that we can in that situation and to wake up. To wake up. So I think most people are also trying to do that. Most people are not some kind of strange, aberrant, alien, devilish being. You know, I remember seeing this movie, I can't remember the name of it, back in the 70s, and it was about the devil. And he would... remember LP records, right? Uh-huh. The records would be coming off the assembly line. He'd be scratching the records. I can't remember what this movie was. It was a comedy. But it's like that, you know. We relate to other people sometimes. Like we think the records are coming off the line and they're deliberately scratching them. They're scratching our lives, you know. It's like, you don't agree with me. I did that on purpose. You know, but actually most people are suffering just like we are, trying to make the best of their lives that they can. So how can we figure out a way to meet each other? Theresa May said yesterday something like, we're doing this Brexit thing and I'm trying to work this out. And oh, by the way, you're not going to get everything you want. Like, compromise is involved here. Like the EU is not just going to say, oh, what would you like from us in order for us to do this transition in a way that works the best for you, right? And then we'll cope with whatever it is that, you know, kind of doesn't work for us. Wouldn't it be great? But our continuous practice is that we're in this world in which myriad things come forth and meet us. The other thing about these myriad things coming forth and meet that's very heartening to me is that if I can stop long enough, a lot of the myriad things that come forth to meet me are really beautiful. You know, we live in a world that is absolutely filled with beauty. Why is that? Why is it beautiful, this world? Why is it beautiful to hear the sound of a crow? Why is it beautiful, all of these things? Because it's not different from us. Because this is our world. We live in this world because of the continuous practice of the world. It's not surprising that we think the ocean is beautiful. It's not surprising that the ocean is like a sutra and that we sit down next to it on the beach when we hear the waves crashing in one after another, that is like a sutra teaching to us wave after wave after wave if we can just sit and listen to it. The days when the ocean is wild and crazy and we run outside and we go, oh, I gotta watch that, I gotta see that, you know? And then sometimes it's really dangerous and we don't gotta see it. You know, we need to stay in the house. But we are of this world. We are not separate from this world. This is our world. This is the world that we inhabit with all being. This is the world that is the myriad things coming forward to meet us. This is the world that is a sutra. That's what's being transmitted. He says the transmission of the Dharma. That's what's being transmitted to us. Dogen says in a poem in the Tenso Kyokon, he says, you know, the moon is in this wave and in the next and in the next. This moon of enlightenment, this representation, this metaphor for enlightenment, this metaphor for realization, this metaphor for this big open heart that we have, this metaphor for myriad things coming to meet us and meeting myriad things is in this wave and in the next wave and in the next wave. It is always transmitting to us. It is always available to us. It is not separate from us. Not only is it not separate from us, but it is wholly presencing constantly. So it's not something partial. We don't have to wait for us to sort of get some place or something in order for us to actually fully receive this transmission or to be the transmitter of this teaching. And yet, at the same time, we don't get it, right? At the same time, we're struggling. At the same time, it's difficult. But it's only a turn of our mind because we are already it. We are not separate from this. This is continuous practice. We are not different from this. So we already completely and totally are this thing that we think is outside of ourselves that we are searching for. And simultaneously, we are searching because we can't find this thing. So that becomes that koan. But the way that we find, I think, the answer to that is that we have to slow down and stop. We have to sit down. We have to do zazen. We have to do whatever it is that we have to do. We have to go to the beach, you know. We have to pay attention. We have to drop the self. That's dropping the self. We have to be in this way where we allow our life to come forward and meet us. That's dropping the self. Dropping the self is not about not having a self. It has nothing to do with not having a self. It's about engaging in continuous practice. It's about being what we already are, which is this world. So this transmission of the Dharma is what Dogen calls radiant light, komyo, radiant light. This is this radiant light of all of life coming forward to meet us. This is the radiant light of our own life. Continuous practice was so because the transmission of the Dharma. Because continuous practice and transmission are not separate events. He's just talking about reality and breaking it down for us in different ways for us to kind of get a grip, a grasp on what it is that might be going on around us. That thing that's going on around us doesn't need any words to tell itself what it is that it is. It just is, being what it is. We say, just this, things just as they are. Continuous practice was so because the transmission of the Dharma is Bodhidharma himself. The fact that the transmission of the Dharma and continuous practice and Bodhidharma himself is the transmission of the Dharma is the same that you yourself are continuous practice. You yourself are the transmission of the Dharma. You yourself are not different from Bodhidharma. That these things are all descriptions of exactly the same event. So there is separation and there's not separation. We have the doctrine of emptiness. We say everything lacks inherent existence, but that doesn't mean that everything is one kind of mushy, primordial, undifferentiated thing. We say form is empty of inherent existence. Emptiness, which is this emptiness of inherent existence, is also form. They're not separate from each other. So we couldn't have... We have everything is form, and that form at the same time is empty of inherent existence. So this form realm, we like to dismiss the form realm and focus on the absolute. Because I think we think the absolute's a real woo-woo feeling. You know, like, ooh, wow, yeah, groovy, man. Everything's the same. Ah, that's really great. It's just going to be so feel-good. But everything is also this. Everything is also a thing simultaneously. There is no such thing as the absolute separate from the relative. They aren't separate events. Those are concepts. We use those concepts as a way to talk about and deconstruct the nature of our understanding. But the reality is they're not separate from each other. So all these things are interrelated. All these things are interpenetrating. Right? They lack inherent existence, and yet simultaneously they are a thing. You know? Right here, a thing. Here, a thing. I can't walk through walls. I am one of the myriad things that come forward and meet me. So we can't dispense with that part. I mean, we want to get rid of that part, but that's what our lives are. So that means that our lives are this continuous practice, this transmission, this being Bodhidharma, this being ourselves, means that these myriad things and ourselves come forward to meet each other and interact with each other. And although we are making up the entirety of the universe, making the universe, the world, as Dogen says, the world worlding the world, making itself, simultaneously, it's always these things, these people, these interactions that we're having. And that's our bodhisattva practice. Our bodhisattva practice is how do we do that? How do we do that? How do we embody and carry this reality itself as it is in this interconnected, interpenetrating, non-inherently existing way and meet each other and take care of each other? And that of course, that's the hard part, right? That's the tough part. That's where we don't want to practice. That's where we're like, gee, this sounds really great. You know, I got really inspired by that lecture because that's really cool stuff, you know? But then what am I going to do when I get in my car and somebody pulls in front of me out there in the world, you know, or does something that I don't like? Then what do I do? That's where our practice comes in. That's where we say, oh, these are myriad things meeting me. Like that person in the red car is a myriad thing that just met me. And what happens at that moment? How do I respond in that moment? That's what we're being asked to do. All this language and, highfalutin way of talking about the nature of the universe and all of those things, you know. It's kind of a way to inspire ourselves to do the hard work, to do this hard work of the practice of no-self, to do this hard work of meeting myriad things. That's where we transmit the Dharma to each other. That's where the whole world is making the world come forward. Continuous practice was so because the transmission of Dharma is Bodhidharma himself. It was so because the transmission of Dharma is the entire universe. Again, the whole universe is transmitting the Dharma. It is so because the whole universe in the 10 directions is the real state of truth. This whole universe, this whole continuous practice, this is the real state of the truth of our existence, of the truth of all existence. One of the things I like about Buddhism is that it's not human-centric, right? It's like it's a religion, at least Soto Zen is, and it's true of Mahayana Buddhism in general, is a religion that's, while we are about the business of trying to figure out how we as an individual human being can do a better job of myriad things in this world, how we as an individual can better practice, because there's no place else for us to do it. You know, I can't do it as Steve. You know, I can't do it as Mark. I can't do it as Holly. I can only do it as Shinshu. So we can only do, as you know, in this particular body, in this particular mind. This book can only practice, do the continuous practice of this book. It can't do the continuous practice. So it's very particular. It's very particular. And yet, what is that continuous practice? It's very universal. And as human beings, we have the mind to envision that, which is probably a good thing because we need that, right? We need that. I was thinking about this mind of mine yesterday. Jacques and I were talking about how people, about people relating to death. And I thought, you know, one of the things about this teaching is that if we actually can let go of our attachment to this life as this person, as who I am, Shinshu, if I can let go of my attachment to this mind, if I can let go of my attachment to self-consciousness, my attachment to being able to define the nature of my experience to myself with my mind, and let my life itself be incredibly porous, and understand that my birth came from this continuous practice of all beings interacting in these causal conditions, and my birth came about. And my death, when I die, that again is going back into this process of life and redefining and remaking itself into something else. So when I die, I'm not going to be this person, and I can't hold on to this mind. But I still am engaged in this continuous practice of making the world. Because the parts that I am become something else that is, right? The parts that I were became or were something else that is. So there's this way in which, as an individual, I don't have this continuity in this certain way, not the way I think I do. And yet, I'm constantly engaged in this process of being one of the myriad things. If I think of my life that way, and I can actually let go of my desire to cling desperately to the sense of self, of this individuality, this entity of who I think I am, there's this kind of joyousness in jumping into, continuing on, you know, the continuous practice of the world, that never stops. It just reforms itself, reformulates itself. This is the transmission. This is a kind of transmission of the Dharma. So it really permeates all of the ways that we think about the nature of our experience, if we want to think about it that way, if we let that happen, if we ponder that, you know. But of course, it always requires that we let go. It always requires of us that somehow that we're constantly letting go of this attachment to having it our way. You know? And of course, the universe has its way with us whether we like it or not. But we think that we can control things in a certain way. So that's a very interesting thing. Buddhism's an awful lot about that. So continuous practice was so because the transmission of the Dharma is Buddha Dharma, Bodhidharma himself. It is so because the transmission of Dharma is the entire universe. It is so because the whole universe in 10 directions is the real state of truth. It is so because the whole universe in 10 directions is Bodhidharma himself. And was so because the whole universe in the 10 directions is the whole universe in the 10 directions. That's very Dogen. So I think I'm going to stop there because I hope that all of this makes sense now. Right? And I'd like to hear what your questions and comments might be. Thank you.